Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferrazzi.
Hey everyone, welcome to The Whole Scoop. We are a health and wellness radio show where our guests are always highly credentialed in their fields. We are here to provide you with different, sometimes opposite perspectives to allow you to make informed decisions for your own health choices. I am your host, Carol Ferrazzi, a registered licensed dietitian practicing for over 30 years and the founder of Naturally Nutrition. You can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. As I said earlier, it's my goal to provide you with highly qualified guests on the topics of discussion. Tonight's show is no exception. Tonight's show is Healthy Feet Equal Healthy Life. And I'm going to remind you, as I always do, that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topics of discussion, it's recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on the program. The call-in number is 347-855-8894, and you can direct questions and comments to our Blog Talk Radio Group page on Facebook, and that is the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group. Let us know what you think. Give us some feedback. Tell us what you want to hear. We've already taken a number of suggestions from you from Facebook, and we've made new shows from your suggestions, so we're always open to that. That's the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group. Like us on Facebook with the Whole Scoop Radio. Like us with the Blog Talk Radio Group. Join us. It's open to the public, so please do. We will, like I said, we will be taking questions later on in the show. At that time, I'm going to call out the last four digits of your telephone number. And remember, if you are going to ask questions, to press the number of one to become part of the queue for questions. All that being said, all that stuff out of the way, again, the show is Healthy Feet Equal Healthy Life. And we have a very special guest tonight. He is Dr. Garrett Wopes. He is a graduate of the University of Calgary from Alberta, Canada, where he received his Bachelor's of Science in Physiology. He's always passionate about medicine. He attended medical school at Des Moines University in Iowa, achieving a Doctor of Podiatric Medicine. During his three-year surgical residency at Florida Hospital in Orlando, he was the chief resident in his final year. While in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, he completed an advanced reconstructive foot and ankle fellowship. Dr. Wopes is a board certified by the American Board of Foot and Ankle Surgeons and a member of the American College of Foot and Ankle Surgeons. He is currently practicing at Avera Orthopedics in Aberdeen, South Dakota. His professional interests include joint replacement surgery, arthroscopy, neurological disorders of the foot and ankle, and advanced reconstruction surgery. Personally, he enjoys fly fishing, golfing, and most of all, spending time with his wife and two children. And I'm just going to tell everybody, I know Dr. Wopes personally. He's a fabulous guy, and I'm going to bring him on right now and say hello. Hello to Garrett.
Thanks for having me, Carol.
How are you?
It's nice. Good. It's nice to talk to you again.
You too. Thank you so much for being here. We've got, I always say we have so much to talk about because we do, but in this case, I wanted to do this show because I really honestly believe that the feet are something that we tend to overlook as people. We just kind of look at everything else, we pay attention to everything else, but we tend to kind of say, oh, I did too much today, my feet are hurting, and we don't really look at the signs of what might be going on and what might be happening. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, I absolutely would agree with that. First off, you've been talking about having this show for 3 years or so since you've been doing your radio, or even maybe before when you were talking to me about potentially doing this radio show. But going back to your question, that's pretty much what I see all day long, is chronic problems of the foot and ankle that were neglected for long periods of time. There is a very rare time where I get somebody in the clinic that hasn't had an acute injury that they have seen somebody in an urgent care or a trauma center for, that I get that has told me that their problem has been going on for 2 or 3 months. It is almost always 6, 9, 12 months, sometimes years before they finally get it checked, and I actually routinely ask them why, and the answers are almost uniformly, I just thought it would go away, and it didn't. And so that's what I see virtually all day long in my clinic.
Wow. Well, and it's true that an overlooked chronic condition of the foot can lead to other issues in the body, right? I mean, or is it like the chicken or the egg kind of thing? I mean, can a chronic problem lead to joint problems in the knee or the hip, or can the hip or the knee lead to the foot?
I think it's both. I think if you talk to most, it's both. The thing that we always focus on is we tend to have these long-standing chronic foot problems, which may change the way we walk, change our style of gait, and then the more proximal things like the knee and the hip and the back start to come into focus and to play. And so, you know, was it the foot that came first? In that case, likely. But sometimes we can have some knee problems and we're adapting our gait there, and then we have some problems towards the foot as well. So I think it's certainly both.
Okay. Well, all that being said, though, what should people be looking at? I mean, some people, I guess I can relate to this because I have my own issues with feet, but, you know, is it a bunion that somebody should be looking at and be concerned about? Is it true that just a bunion or a callus could throw off the balance, which could lead to other issues? I mean, how detailed should somebody be paying attention?
Well, I think actually, I mean, that's a fairly complex question, but I think the key is that whatever your problem is in the foot or the ankle or even the lower extremity in general, is that you don't let it get to the point where it is debilitating or interfering with your activities of daily living or your normal activities. And the reason is that by the time that you get to that point, it is truly harder to treat. For example, I see patients all the time in the clinic with heel pain, and probably a term that most people have heard before is plantar fasciitis or a heel spur. And so I see patients probably 5 or 6 a day in the clinic with plantar fasciitis, or they come in saying that they have a heel spur, and they've had it for 9 or 12 months, and they want it to go away by tomorrow. And I sympathize with those patients, and I completely understand what they're talking about. They're in pain, but over the last 9 or 12 months, it has progressively gotten worse. It was first started as a dull thing that really didn't bother them, and then it got a little worse, but they thought it would likely go away. And now it's to the point where it's completely changing their normal activities. They probably have to stop exercising or stop walking or whatever those activities that they enjoy to do. They've likely stopped, and now they want it to be gone as soon as possible. And I have to counsel them, and it's difficult because I have to tell them that this is not something that's going to go away soon. It took a long time to get to the point that they've come to see me, and it'll take a long time for it to go away as well. Now, we have lots of, advanced treatments and exercises and all sorts of stuff that we can do to help achieve their goal, but it never goes away quickly, and it's always a longer process than they expect. Half the reason it's a longer process than they expect is because we got to keep using our feet. If we could stay off of them for an extended period of time, most things actually tend to get better, but we can't. We have to keep moving. We have to keep working. We have to keep exercising, and it's difficult to stay off them. So whether there's one thing moving up, you know, to different health aspects of your life, I don't know, but I stress the importance of not letting it get to the point where you have to, not letting it get to the point where it's controlling your activities or your daily activities.
So, well, Garrett, I mean, that's absolutely sound advice, but the reality of that, where do they just come to you? Do they go to their GP first? What do they do, like, at the first sign of that? And then if they do take a different route than other than, say, someone like you or you, is it realistic to think that it's going to be acted upon appropriately, or is it just going to be something where we kind of mask the symptoms with maybe something else and send them home and they feel a little bit better, but the problem never really goes away?
Yeah, I see your point there. I actually think that, you know, discussing, even looking up on some reputable websites, such as the national websites, to get some advice about what they think is going on is helpful. But if that doesn't help for you, then certainly talking to your GP or whomever that you see on a more routine basis. Because, you know, we all go to the doctor semi-regularly, and we can always bring up that question. And if you do bring up the question and they don't know or they don't have a solution for you, then they're usually pretty good about directing you to somebody who does. At least that's in my experience. And in the medical culture right now, that's prominent. So we go see our GP and they take care of our overall health. But if there's something in particular that they're not sure of or they think that you need to see a specialist for, they're always suggesting a referral to a specialist. And whether that specialist be myself or somebody else or somebody obviously in the foot and ankle field or in another field, I think that that's the important part. You got to get the information, the up-to-date information, to best treat yourself.
Well, would you agree, I mean, we could go back to what we opened the show with. Would you agree that if that's the case, yes, you're right, that most GPs will go to a specialist. But what about that person that goes in and says, you know what, my feet are hurting, but my knee is really causing me a major issue, and I just sometimes can't stand it, and it's just not working. And they get referred to an orthopod for their knee, but the root cause of the problem is the foot. How, in your experience, in general, how long does it take for someone to actually get to the root cause of that particular problem, or if they ever do?
No, I think they do, depending on the ambition of the patient. I mean, you know, if the knee is your primary focus and primary area of pain, and you do go see an orthopedic surgeon or somebody else in the knee field to help treat that, you know, they certainly will have the knowledge base to be able to give you tips or ideas, regarding the foot or ankle as perhaps being the cause. And if that would not resolve the problem, then, you know, everyone is pretty good about finding the right person to treat it. I mean, I'm very lucky. I work up here in Aberdeen in an orthopedic group. So my orthopedic colleagues see essentially pathology from every joint in the body, including the foot and ankle, and they're very good at treating foot and ankle stuff. But when it gets to the point where they're not sure and maybe some of the treatment hasn't worked, well, then, you know, they definitely refer that patient to myself. And sometimes the stuff that I have is the exact same thing, and maybe we tweak something here or there and get the results that we need. And I find, or I have, you know, like you said before, Carol, I've been around the United States a little bit, and Orlando and Pennsylvania and some other places, and I've found that sentiment virtually everywhere. And even if it's not potentially a podiatrist that's being referred to, maybe it's a foot and ankle orthopedic surgeon, well, it's the same thing. You're getting the good information, advice, and treatment from the person who you should be getting it from.
Okay, well, I mean, and I think that's an excellent point to make, in that just because you have knee pain and it might be a root cause from the foot doesn't mean you don't treat knee. And vice versa. I mean, we opened the show with saying that you know, it could be hip pain, it could be any, yeah, can it go up to up the spine and up the neck as well from the foot?
Absolutely.
That's
probably the biggest one.
All
the time. I probably see it every day, if not multiple times a day. And we talked about this before. Is it the chicken or the egg that comes first? I don't know. It's really tough to delineate. When I discuss things like that with my patients and they come in and they're talking about their feet hurting, but really in the past few months their back has really started hurting, I usually ask questions, well, what is your primary area that is debilitating for you? And if it is the back, then I send them to the right person to get that looked at. If I can't, if I can correct something with some simple orthotics perhaps, or some physical therapy, then we certainly try that. If that fails, then I certainly send them to somebody who can potentially do a little bit more in-depth examination and advanced treatment than I can. But you'd be surprised. I probably have a pretty good success rate of really basic care when someone comes in and they're complaining about both back or back, hip, and feet pain. And I put them into some, you know, relatively inexpensive over-the-counter inserts and get them some physical therapy to work with their back and both their lower extremities all the way down to their foot. And I have I feel like the patients come back and they're better. And I think when you have true back pathology, it's the focus of your discomfort. But when the back pathology or the back pain that you've developed from your feet being bad, that seems to get better with basic treatment. So you can I kind of feel it out a little bit in the clinic, and I hope people kind of understand what I'm talking about. But that's kind of my experience with that whole body type situation.
Okay, so. That being said, the kinds of chronic issues that you see can they lead to some more acute situations for people?
Such as, Carol?
Oh, I guess I'm kind of traveling up the body from the foot. I'm kind of putting together everything that you've just said in terms of if they come and see you maybe 6-7 months after they've started to really have the pain and now they're in severe pain. And when someone's in, it's just been my experience that when someone's in severe pain, other things in the body tend to break down as well because the immune system is constantly fighting. So do you see, you know, just a combination of factors as well, or maybe not just generally in orthopedics?
Yeah, no, I think you're definitely onto something. I mean, more of the global foot problems, and what I mean by that is like flat foot, which mm-hmm. has multiple joints involved, or if you have arthritis, particularly of the ankle, where you're essentially not walking on that ankle in the proper fashion, that tends to make things go up the body, up the legs, into the spine much worse. And it makes sense because you're favoring the side that's symptomatic. And if you're favoring that side that's symptomatic, in whatever the pathology it is, whether it's just simple arthritis or a major deformity like flat foot is, then your whole body, the way that you walk, all your muscles, the way that they work in concert is all set off. And I think that's what you're trying to get at here is that something that seems so benign and simple, something like even a bunion or a big toe pain, can make you walk differently, can cause you to favor that one side and throw off the whole balance of your entire body. And I actually saw a patient the other day, 2 days ago, in my clinic, who, and this is just an example that I was thinking about, who had one leg that was about an inch and a half shorter than the other leg. He was a child, 11 years old. And when I talked to him and his mother, he had shoulder pain, hip pain, back pain. And that's kind of like the most extreme example, but it makes sense. If one side of that body is, you know, an inch and a half shorter, then you can imagine how it would affect all the other joints,
sure,
whether it be the same side or the other side.
Right. And for an 11-year-old to have that kind of pain, that makes me worry on a larger scale for as he ages, you know, and some of the things that he may face. So that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, with just the simple little things that throw off balance, because the body is designed for balance and to be aligned. It's really not designed to do much of anything. You know, it's not designed to overcompensate all the time. And an 11-year-old overcompensating like that makes me worry chronically for him.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, yep. I'm sure that you too. I did a little more research, and there's a couple of things I want to talk about, but we got to take a slight break here. I just want to remind everybody that, they are...
You're listening to the Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferrazzi.
I just love that. See, we've worked hard on that. Isn't that, that just helps out a lot. It kind of says everything. The number to call in is 347-855-8894. We're going to be taking questions here. We're getting a lot of blog questions. We're going to start taking questions here soon because we're getting a whole lot more than we usually do. So that's good. At this point in time, usually people hold back and wait it out a little bit, but we're getting a lot of questions tonight. So, Garrett, I think we're going to have to start taking some of these questions if that's okay with you. But is there a place where people can contact you if you want them to? Do you have a website with your clinic?
Well, you know, I don't. And the reason for that, unfortunately, is that the way that medicine is going right now is that that big hospitals tend to be hiring and employing more and more doctors. So, unfortunately, I don't have a personal website or anything that you can go to.
That's okay. I just thought I'd put it out there in case you wanted to share. But, you know, we understand how health is. We understand you got to go through the hospital list. You got to go through the PCP. Yep. We get all that. It's okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to give you the opportunity if you had it. It's all good. But I'm going to ask everybody, if you are calling in, you want to ask a question, press the number 1 to get in the queue for questions. And we'll be taking those questions in a little bit. But we've got a couple of things. Here's one that says, can bunions and foot issues be hereditary, and are there some preventative measures?
Awesome question. This is probably one of my favorites, and I'm really glad somebody asked this. So the answer to that is probably every single bunion is hereditary. They actually think that there's a gene that predisposes people to bunions. Now, that doesn't mean that if you have that gene that you're going to develop a bunion. What it means is that if you have the gene and you have specific activity, circumstances, shoe gear, etc., that predisposes that gene to developing that bunion, then you will likely develop that bunion. And that's kind of a conversation that I have with people all the time. It is a myth that shoe gear or tight shoe gear or high heels causes bunions, but it absolutely does predispose the people who have the gene for that bunion. So it's absolutely hereditary. So answer number 1 is it's absolutely hereditary. Can you do things to avoid it from developing or treat it if it starts? Yeah, absolutely. We try this every day in the clinic. And it's actually pretty simple. Most bunions are caused by instability of multiple joints. So if we stabilize those joints, we can slow the bunion from progressing or developing or getting worse. So how else or how easy to do this is simply You stabilize the inside of the foot using a arch support. And the key is you can't use a soft arch support. And that's what we all, I mean, innately, that's what we all think. If we put more cushion in our feet, the better that they're going to feel. And actually, it's the complete opposite. The harder or more rigid of a surface that we walk on, the better it is for our feet. And so when I see patients with early bunions or they have a question like that, I get them into a semi-rigid type orthotic, and I can suggest one, and you can write it down, and you know I don't get paid by them or anything like that. And so you can use them in your shoes, and the more you use them, the more you're treating the development of that bunion potentially. Now, it doesn't completely stop it from progressing. It just slows it down. But it potentially may slow it down to the point where it doesn't bother you for, you know, your rest of your life, potentially. So did I hit all the points there? I think I might have.
I think you did. I want to take you back to one of the points you made in terms of the hard surface. The hard surface is better, and it's a myth that shoes don't cause a problem. So I'm gonna hold that for the second part of that question for myself, only because I want to know about women in high heels and whether or not there's foot damage. So that's my question. So let's go back to the hard surface. Why is a hard surface better for someone with bunions?
Well, let me explain that a little bit better. So when I say a hard surface, I don't mean a hard flat surface, such as walking barefoot on hard floors. Nor do I even mean wearing a supportive shoe on hard floors every day, because we know that that can cause foot pain. But what I mean is a supportive, harder surface. So a lot of the times we go and we pick up gel-type inserts or soft inserts. And those inserts go into our feet, and maybe initially they make them feel fairly good. But if you think about the stability or the support of that insert, you know, every person has a specific weight. And if you can take your finger or very little pressure and you can change the position of that gel or soft insert with your hands or your fingers, can you imagine what your body weight is doing when you stand on them? It's not doing much. Essentially, your feet, whichever way that they naturally position, are going to position in that same exact way with a gel or a non-sturdy, non-rigid support. But in contrast, if you put in a sturdy, rigid type support, arch and heel, well, then when you put weight through that arch support or that insert, it doesn't change shape. It remains in the shape of maximal biomechanics. And that's a big word, but essentially think of biomechanics as the way the foot should move and the most stable position the foot should be in. So that's what these arch supports or the rigid arch supports or inserts try to do. They try to maximize the foot's biomechanics. So if you put you're putting your foot in something that's harder, that's rigid, and that's maximizing the foot's biomechanics, initially it's not very comfortable. And there's always a little break-in period, usually a week or two. But after you get through that initial week or two break-in period, usually, whatever problem that may be ailing you with your foot improves, and certainly you stabilize your foot better for any of those deformities like bunions that may be developing.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Thank you for that. That was certainly not what I was expecting you to hear, because you get all of these commercials, you know, the memory foam, the gel supports, the comfort this and that, and you're right. I mean, if you can if you can imagine what your body weight is doing in those, then it is shifting. Everything is shifting. And so how can you stabilize and support something? Thank you. Is it a myth that women who wear heels all the time don't mess up their feet, or what about that?
Well, that is tougher to answer because the literature, the medical reports have all looked at multiple reasons or multiple problems, particularly in the front of the foot. And what they say is that tight shoes, high-heeled shoes, don't necessarily cause these problems. But in contrast, if you're predisposed to problems, then they're going to exacerbate it and make them worse. Now, one of the major problems of high-heel shoes is developing a contracture of your calf muscle. And that's called equinus. But essentially, when you're always in a elevated position of the heel, the calf muscle can get tighter. And if the calf muscle gets tighter, it pulls on your Achilles tendon, which attaches to the back of the heel. And it actually pulls the heel up and directs pressure to the front of the foot. Think of that foot as that lever. So if you're pulling the back of the foot up, the front of the foot is getting much more pressure. And that's obvious when you wear the high-heeled shoes. But even when you're out of the high-heeled shoes, you maintain that tightness. And what we know is that increased pressure on the front of the foot can cause a plethora of problems, from bunions to hammer toes to calluses to just pain in the front of the foot in general. We actually have a term for that. It's called metatarsalgia. And what that essentially means is just the front of the foot hurts. You really don't have any pathology. You don't have a deformity. You don't have a bunion. You don't have a hammer toe. You don't have a stress fracture, nothing like that. Just the front of the foot hurts because you have too much pressure on the front of your foot. And then let me put this in context for you. Imagine a little tiny increase of pressure on the front of the foot and you walking on that foot 10,000 plus steps a day. Potentially for the first 9,000, it might feel fine. But for the last 1,000, because you've been stepping on it all day long with that little increase of pressure, that can really develop some discomfort on patients. So I'm not gonna say that it's okay, or that I advise, or that high-heeled shoes are okay. I'm just saying that as far as we know, they don't necessarily cause deformity or are the root cause of some of the problems, but we do know that they can exacerbate things.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. Again, we've got some other blog questions, but before we get into those, I want to kind of run through some things. I looked up some information. I just kind of want to scratch the surface on these. You tell me what you think. One of the questions kind of focuses on one of these areas. There's a thing called the 10 foot problems that could signal bigger health issues. So number one is the ball of foot pain, which could indicate bursitis, colored toes, which could indicate a fungus, hair loss on the feet, which could be indicative of a vascular problem or diabetes, skin changes on the foot, which could be peripheral vascular disease. Open wounds could mean nerve damage. For some reason, we're getting an echo tonight. We don't usually get an echo, so just bear with me. Numbness could mean diabetes, peripheral nerve damage, spinal issues, even sexually transmitted diseases. Painful joints, osteoarthritis, heel pain, spurs, gout, spinal tumors. A mole on the foot could mean a skin cancer. And, of course, none of these are definitive, but it's just possible. And dry skin could mean athlete's feet, psoriasis, or eczema. Are those truly the top 10? Do you see things like that? Do you put those pictures together?
everything that you detailed there was pretty spot on. And you could, I mean, I could even advance on virtually every single one of those topics. But that's in a nutshell, probably the base of my practice. That's what I see all the time. And podiatrists in particular are at the forefront of diagnosing diabetes. Yes, the primary care doctors do far more of that. But on a monthly basis, I will diagnose a patient with diabetes. On a monthly basis, I'll diagnose a patient with peripheral arterial disease or vascular disease. And on a monthly basis, or even on a weekly basis, I may diagnose a patient with rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, psoriasis in general, which are all systemic diseases. And there's the old adage that the foot is the first thing that tends to show itself with some of these systemic diseases, and I think it's spot on. Even something simple like heart disease, coronary artery disease, or plaques in the heart, oftentimes that may go asymptomatic for a long time, but they get skin changes down in the foot because of their vascular supply is so poor. And so we start looking into why their vascular or their vascularity down the foot is so poor, and then we start seeing that they have a whole systemic problem. And we run into that all the time. And I think podiatrists, as a general rule, are always looking for these stuff, and to some degree act in a primary medicine sense by diagnosing a lot of this stuff and then referring it to the proper specialists or even the general practitioners to really manage. But all those things that you mentioned, Carol, are pretty spot on.
So if I were to come to a podiatrist, Garrett, and I had some of those, any of those issues, and I could conceivably walk out of your office going, who knew I had diabetes, or who knew I had peripheral vascular disease, or now I'm in for a world of changes here. And are any of these preventable? Diabetes maybe not, but maybe some of these other issues, are they preventable if they're caught earlier or not? I just want to kind of get it out there because I want people to understand that the feet are part of the body too. So we kind of have to pay attention to what's happening, and they're talking to us when there's something off.
The term preventable is difficult. Potentially maybe preventable. I don't even know how to address that really, because oftentimes when we start to look for these things, because the feet are showing the symptoms, they're already in process.
Okay.
But I go back to what we talked about right at the beginning, that more often than not, people let it go for long periods of time thinking it'll just get better. And that's likely why I'm stating that I'm not sure that it necessarily is preventable, but it potentially could be preventable. And as far as your question about walking into the office for maybe skin changes and walking out as a diabetic, that's not conceivable. That's real. That happens all the time. I mean, usually we have to get labs and other modalities, other tests to make sure that that's actually truly the case. But that's very, very common.
Wow. Okay, so let me do just a short break again. I want to make sure everybody knows you're listening to the Whole Scoop Radio.
You're listening to the Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferrazzi.
So we have that. You can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. We're talking with Dr. Garrett Ropes tonight, who is a doctor of podiatry medicine, and he's given us fabulous information tonight. Thank you so much for being here. I think we're all just learning a whole lot, things that we may or may not have thought about before. I'm going to go back to the blog. We got some questions on the board. Remember to press the number 1 if you have a question and get in the queue for questions. We've got a couple of questions here. Do you ever suggest a chiropractor when somebody is out of alignment, and does that help your practice, or do you guys work together at all, or that's one of the questions on the blog?
Yes and yes. In my area here in the Midwest, chiropractors are heavily utilized, and I think that they do a fantastic job. I refer patients to chiropractic care, particularly when we've had, you know, potentially not the optimal outcome on foot pain in relation to back pain, and that's often very helpful. And they often refer to me for patients that they potentially see. They have back problems or even just leg problems that they've tried to adjust and it really hasn't gotten better, or they've tried physical therapy and it hasn't gotten better. The chiropractors here in my area, I mean, they're really advanced. They do a lot in the way of physical therapy, a lot in the way of their own adjustments and training. And so we absolutely work hand in hand. And I'm a big proponent of chiropractors.
Well, you know, we've had a number of chiropractors on this show as well, and they've given some really sound advice and some good, solid information. So if you're not familiar, those that are listening, if you're not familiar with chiropractic, you know, they do have a place, and they have done a lot of good. So I'm glad to know that you're working with them. That's great.
Absolutely.
So we'll just take another question here on the blog for a second. We've got, should you try to treat yourself for fungus or wounds, and can they be a sign of a more serious health issue?
First off, can they be a sign of a more serious health issue? Yes to both, wounds in particular. Do I think you should be trying to treat your own wound? Absolutely not. And I can't stress that enough. If you develop a wound to your foot that's not traumatic, you didn't cut it, or some other type event that may have caused this wound, and that wound is getting better. But if it's not getting better, even if it's just a basic cut and it's not getting better, or you've developed a wound insidiously, absolutely do not try to treat that on your own. That is a sign of something worse, and that needs to be professionally managed, because we've all heard the horrific stories of patients such as diabetic patients or vascular patients, etc., that end up going upwards with amputation. And that's a real problem. So wounds, absolutely not. You should absolutely see a primary care doctor. You should see a podiatrist. You should see a wound care specialist. You need to see somebody for that wound. Now, fungus is a little bit of a bigger story. I mean, there's all sorts of fungus, and the feet tend to be a primary target for fungus, mostly because it's often very dark because we wear shoes, and fungus like dark areas. It's often sweaty or moist, particularly in non-warm places like where you live, Carol. Where I live, it's essentially snowing here for 6-plus months of the year. So you're always in shoes. And fungus loves those at that environment, and it can cause athlete's foot or tinea pedis. It can cause other fungal infections. It can get into the nails and cause a fungal toenail. What I would suggest to the listeners is that if you have a mild case of athlete's foot and you know that it's athlete's foot and you've tried to treat it, maybe for a couple weeks and it's not getting better, it certainly could be something else and that should be looked at. The same for fungal toenails. And I think that's just an overall good advice. you know, if you've had it before, or if you think it is something and you're trying a treatment and it's not getting better, then certainly seek out a professional to get it looked at. And don't just let it go. Don't let it go for many, many months, because if you can get on it sooner, it's often very easily treated. But if it goes many months and goes into a chronic stage, then it can be much tougher. So wounds, no, always seek professional care with wounds. If it's a little skin fungal infection, but it's not gone in a week or two, absolutely seek some advice.
So for the fungal, the potential fungal infection, they can try an over-the-counter situation first and see if it works?
Yeah. The pharmacies have multiple over-the-counter topical medications that you can try. Lamisil, Lotrimin are a couple of the ones that everybody knows. Tenactin is another one that you see on TV a lot. And they're all essentially the exact same type of medicine, with maybe just little different changes of names, but they all do the same thing. So you can certainly seek that at your local pharmacy initially, and then find other medical treatment if it didn't work.
Okay. So that being said, let me just get to, we got a couple minutes here. I was really surprised to see, I guess I'm not surprised as I read it, and I was it kind of made sense, but, you know, how many people think about the hair on their foot and then no hair on their foot, you know, like that could mean an issue, that could be indicative of some kind of vascular issue without the hair on your foot. Like, who would even think about that, Garrett? I mean, some of these things, I can understand why people wait so long, because they just, it's not something that you would normally pick up on.
Yeah, it's very subtle, isn't it, Carol?
And yeah, really.
And that's the problem with these systemic things, because these systemic things don't come on acutely. They take potentially years or decades to actually form. But that's a very real symptom is loss of hair growth. And it's not just vascular disease, because patients with diabetes who tend to have problems with their nerves, we call that neuropathy, they lose their hair too, because those nerves the hair is controlled by something called the autonomic nervous system. And the autonomic nervous system controls the growth of the hair. It also controls the moisture of the skin. It also controls the flexibility of the skin. And unfortunately, the autonomic nervous system is one of the first nerves to be damaged in a patient with diabetes. So sometimes even the first sign of diabetes is hair loss, particularly on the toes and the top of the foot. And that's a very real thing, but it's very subtle, because a lot of people don't notice it. Women in particular, because sometimes they just get rid of them. They get rid of the hair, and maybe it stops growing, and that's, you know, for them, that's one less place to essentially not shave.
Right.
But if it stops growing, there's a reason why. Yes, as we age, we probably slow our hair growth down a little bit, and there might be a little less of it, particularly in our extremities. But that's usually at advanced age. You're looking at, you know, 65, 70 or greater. So if it's happening before then, it might be a sign of something worse.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. Let's do one more blog question, and then we're going to go to the board. And it's a real quick question, I think, on insurance. Does insurance cover things like nail clippings for a foot doctor and diabetes?
That's very difficult to answer, because most are very different.
Depends on the insurance.
As a general rule, I tell all patients that likely will not be the case. And the reason is because if it's not medically necessary, the insurance company will likely not cover it. It is medically necessary in a very small group of people. And if you are curious about that, I would suggest that you call and discuss that with your local podiatrist office, and they might be able to help you better. But frankly, that group of people that I suggest are very small are getting smaller on a year-to-year and a month-to-month basis. And that's just because the insurance are trying to control costs better, and they're making it much more and more specific about whom can do those quote-unquote nail care procedures. That being said, is if you have nail changes or you're concerned about nail changes, you can always be evaluated, but you may not have that procedure performed, but you got the evaluation to hopefully give you the tools to help yourself a little bit better.
Okay. What about nail changes in general, though? I mean, as you age, nails get thicker. Sometimes they become too thick to cut on your own. Some older people can't even get to their nails. They can't manage it. Some of them are diabetic. They shouldn't be cutting their nails. There's a risk. So would that be medically necessary then? Would that be considered medically necessary?
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah,
it's really
okay.
Hard. Guidelines are really tough. Yeah. What I can tell you is from my perspective, and this is mostly just a personal opinion, if you're diabetic and you are at risk for skin breakdown, you should absolutely have a professional evaluate your nails and give recommendations. Potentially, if those recommendations mean that a medical professional trims or clips those nails, then that could be one solution.
Okay, great.
So
let's go to the board. I'm going to remind everybody, if you want to ask a question, you got to press 1. We've got a few minutes left. We're going to take a couple of questions here. So we're going to go with caller 2205.
Hello.
Hi.
I was just wondering, I don't do as much cardio as I used to, but I was wondering if you had any recommendations of what the best kind of sneakers to wear, whether it's weightlifting in the gym or running or something of that nature. Is there a better type of sneaker? Like, the more support, the better, the more gel, the better, because I tend to go towards the gel and the ASICs. But
yep.
From what you said previously, the cushier isn't always the better.
Yeah, good question. Very common question. Now, first off, I'll kind of preface this and state that even in my practice, I do not make any shoe gear recommendations.
Okay.
And so to generally answer your question, this is how I answer that question to my patients is, I recommend a supportive, well-structured, partially rigid athletic shoe. And mm-hmm. I think that hits all of the important points to optimize your biomechanics. And that shoe is different for everybody. Some people do feel much better in a shoe that is not as rigid and does have a little bit more cushion. And some people do much better in a very rigid type athletic shoe. And unfortunately, there's really no other way other than trial and error to find that out. But what you can do is you can go to a good shoe store and discuss that with them, and they'll have some ideas for you, especially depending on what activities that you're hoping to accomplish in the shoe. And they're usually really good. If you go to a well-known shoe store and talk to somebody with knowledge, they're usually pretty good about recommending the right type of platform for you. Another trick that I usually do, or I tell patients, and I'll let you know here over the phone, is pick a shoe up that you like, a style that you like, or maybe a style that you've had in the past that you've done well with. And simply twist it. Take the heel, twist it one way. Take the toes, twist it another way. if you don't have to put a lot of force through that shoe to twist it, it's probably not sturdy enough. So, you know, for example, we all know some shoes where you can literally just kind of twist it and mold it into virtually any position that you want to. That's probably not sturdy enough for your feet for an activity. But if you do have to put a little bit of muscle power in to twist it, then it's probably pretty sturdy, and it might be something that would be helpful for you.
Okay.
Wow.
I hope I answered a little.
The science and technology of shoes. Wow.
Yeah, not much.
The problem is that every
manufacturer does good shoes, and every manufacturer may do, quote unquote, not as good shoes. And so it's really tough to tell you overall brand name that, and like I said, I don't recommend any, and that's the first thing that I say when a patient asks me.
Okay.
Wow.
And then I kind of had like one more question. Is that
mm-hmm,
right?
Sure.
On my left foot, my fourth toe, I kind of get a little bit of pain, a little bit higher up into my foot. Is there some kind of like insert that would help to relieve some of that pain? Because I tend to get it when I wear flip-flops or I wear heels.
Right, right. That's a pretty specific location.
Okay.
So I don't know potentially what could be causing that. But you can certainly experiment. And it does make sense to me that it hurts in flip-flops because you have to activate your plantar musculature much more robustly in flip-flops because your toes are holding the flip-flop on. And
mm-hmm.
So with that plantar musculature firing, essentially every step that you take, if there's a weakness somewhere, if one of those muscles is a little weaker, if one of those tendons is a little weaker, or you have some inflammation there, it's going to hurt. And the same thing is with heels. You're just pushing that front of your foot into the ground more, and that's going to exacerbate any problems that you have there. If there's nothing structurally abnormal about your foot, and you see, you know, I would recommend seeing somebody to discuss that with them, to make sure that you don't have any structural problems or an underlying pathology, then I think it's probably just a balance of biomechanics. And certainly utilizing some different inserts, or even more rigid shoes to see if you can't redistribute some of the force across the bottom of the foot, that might be helpful for you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for calling in. Really appreciate the call. Garrett, that's just a plethora of information, and we're pretty much out of time.
That went pretty fast, Carol.
Yeah, it really did, didn't it? So I just feel like there's a whole lot more here to cover. We should probably think about doing some kind of follow-up. We're getting more questions, this is a hot issue that most people need to know more about. So would you be willing to come back and talk to us again?
Oh, yeah, of course. I would come back anytime.
Well, thank you so very much for everything. I mean, it's just been amazingly informative and true to the whole scoop. I thank you. We all thank you. I'm just ecstatic that you've helped us out like this. Thank you. I want to tell everybody, though, that we're going to be on again July 28th, where we're going to be talking about essential oils. And we're going to talk about whether they're myth, magic, or the real deal. And the person joining us is an expert in essential oils, and she has a school to become certified in aromatherapy. So that should be pretty interesting. give us a shout out when you if you have questions or anything on the blog, and let us know what you'd like to hear from that show, what you'd like to see from that show, or any other future shows. We've got some great stuff coming up this year. We're booking into next year, and we're gonna hit some different topics as we go along. So please keep us informed and keep us on your sites and Facebook, and like us as we go along. The more that you like us, the better off we do. Garrett, thank you, and we're gonna schedule them again. Thank you so
much. Absolutely, my pleasure.
Thank you, and good night, everybody.